Australian True Crime. The live show is coming.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with purchase.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and to Aboriginal elders emerging. The following podcast contains content of a graphic, violent nature and is not suitable for children.
All she wanted to do was help other people. So I just find it so bizarre that such evil found such light.
That's Kylie Nicholas. And the person she's talking about is her younger sister, Nicole Patterson. Kylie contacted us recently to ask if she could speak with me. A couple of weeks ago, a friend of hers asked her if she'd ever heard of our podcast, and she hadn't. She was shocked to hear that in an episode we recorded in 2017 with former homicide detective Jeff Maher, I mentioned having met Nicole 2 weeks before she was murdered by serial killer Peter Dupas.
This is Australian True Crime with Michelle Laurie and Emily Webb. Come with us as we go beyond the news cycle to find out how people become killers, how people become victims, and what happens next.
Kylie hoped I could tell her more about my meeting with her younger sister, and we started emailing back and forth. Of course, I asked if she'd be interested in podcasting, and eventually she agreed. I have to tell you, I think it's a very special podcast for many reasons. And all of them are about Kylie. It's a longer episode than usual, and it includes themes that we don't normally cover. There's a subsequent interview at the end, instigated by Kylie, and a pretty big confession from me. I hope you have time to really sit with this one, because in such an uncertain world, it's not every day you get to spend time with someone like Kylie Nicholas. She might even call it a God drop. She started by reminding me of how long ago she lost her sister Nicole, but as is her way, she quickly shifted to her concern for the rest of us.
Yeah, 21 and a half years it's been. So
is it?
Yes, it's crazy to be this side, but I was just thinking about how much we were blindsided. Like, it just came out of nowhere, being such a... like being a psychopath and being one of these tragic murders that people don't see coming. So I was just thinking about how completely blindsided we were, and then thinking how poignant it is to be talking to you today at a time when we've been collectively blindsided and COVID is enveloping the globe and it's this time of deep sorrow, and it just feels particularly poignant.
And plus, do you find yourself thinking about people who aren't here to witness it and wondering what they would make of it?
Yes. That's crazy. I have thought about that. I think, it's been a time to really stop and reflect. And I think I work as a chaplain, and I see it's been quite heartbreaking, the impact of to walk alongside families, particularly those who have passed from COVID, but those who have died from natural causes and they haven't been able to be with their loved ones or have proper funerals. And I just think, so obviously there's been that terrible, terrible cost and pain and, I believe, trauma that will go on. But I think there have been positives if we look for them. There's a lot to, it has given us time to go deeper and reflect.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it is hard to talk about positives, obviously. I feel sorry for Nadia, the wag, who, I don't know if you read any of these sorts of sites. Oh, this poor girl she's a footy wife or something. And she posted on her social media how she thought that COVID had actually been just really great because it let her get into her fitness and And I just thought, oh, I can just imagine the comments. I didn't even look because I can imagine the...
What a brave lady.
I can imagine the comments that she would have gotten for saying something like that.
But you know what? If you look from a compassionate side, I just think, imagine her life prior. She would have had no time.
Yeah.
I can only imagine, people's lives who are whirlwinds. It has... Let me preface it by saying there's no real positives. If we could choose, it's like with Nikki's murder, the suffering, I'm a different person, and it's because of the suffering is taking me deeper. And I'll never forget, one of my best friend's mum gave me this little card that said, suffering is a gift, da 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 da. And I just about put it in the bin. I didn't want to hear that my beloved sister had been murdered, but now I get that. Would we choose this? No way. Would we ever choose suffering? I would never choose it. I tell you what, if I could go back and things could be different, I would never want all the lessons I've learned. I would rather have Nikki and be ignorant, to be honest.
Of course.
And not have grown. And I think I think there is room in suffering to say, hey, this is where it feels a bit better in my life. I don't know this person that you talk of, but I can only imagine that it must have been a whirlwind. I talk to parents who say, we're actually sitting around the table having family dinners now, whereas before we're always off to sports.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I definitely do. And you're not the first family member of a victim who has said, I know this is a weird thing to say, but in a way it's gifted me. I've become this different person, and I've created this whole other life around it that's enabled me to help so many other people, and I would never have done that. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Would I choose it? Not in a million years. I'd rather have my sister here, and that's obvious. But the thing is, there was no – look, I've met many, many victims of crime over the years, and there's many, many victims of crime who stay in the same place, and I'm not going to judge them. They stay victims. They stay focused on the terrible tragedy of what's happened, and they can't get out of that place, and it eats them and it kills them. Perhaps I would have been one of those people too, but I just feel, really lucky to at least be having a crack one day at a time. My life is not perfect, and it's not free of pain, and I'll always have a broken heart, but I've learned how to live around that. And I think it's finding meaning. I think one of the big game changers for me was reading Viktor Frankl's Search for Meaning. And, he talks, he was a, do you know Viktor Frankl?
No.
He was interned, I think he was in his 30s when he was in Auschwitz. And he survived Auschwitz. And he talks about, and he was a psychiatrist prior to the war. And he talks about his observations of people and those that chose It was attitude that made the difference between life and death. And I think when you're a mother, you actually don't really, at the end of the day, even though you may get to the point where you think, I've got no choice, I can't go on, you actually do have to choose life because you have little people. Well, that's where I landed. And then, okay, if I have to do this, I don't want to live this miserable existence. So what can I do to make, you know, to find meaning? And Viktor Frankl talks about, it's called Man's Search for Meaning, and I think that was really pivotal for me in my journey. And obviously I was an atheist. I'm a first generational Christian, and I'm not your most conventional Christian, I'll give you that, but I do believe in a God, because I'll never forget actually going into court and Jeff Ma, the head of homicide, saying, gosh, what's happened to you? Because I just looked different. And I said, I don't know, Jeff, all I can tell you is I couldn't do life and now I can. So anyway, I'm not sure if that's something that you really want me to discuss. But
yeah, that's fascinating. I was about to ask you, were you Christian? Were you ministering before?
No. I was a dead set atheist. I was, and in fact, when Nikki was murdered, I really believed that was evidence again that God didn't exist, because there is so much senseless suffering in this world, and you just question, if there is a God, how can God exist? You know, my mum still subscribes to that view. I'm happy for you, Kylie, she says, but I'm sorry, you know, if there was a God, he would have intervened. I mean, you just have to, you know, intervened and prevented Nicole's murder, obviously. But, yeah, that's a really quite a long story that, maybe we can save that for another time. But I really just wanted to say I was so excited when my friend told me that you as a podcaster, and you'd mentioned Nicole, that you'd met her. And yeah, just fascinated by that. So thanks heaps for.
I was fascinated by your email. I was like, wow, I was not expecting that. And that was so great, because every time, like, I've told that story a couple of times and I always hesitate to tell it, because I always think, oh, I don't want anyone to think that I'm trying to like link myself to Nicole or make out that we had a relationship or a friendship that we didn't.
Oh, that's actually really thoughtful of you to say that, because do you know how many. These sort of things that happen, like I'll never forget, all of us people come in and I'm saying, oh, so-and-so knows you. It was like they were living vicariously through the fact that my sister had been murdered, and, oh, yeah, they knew Nikki and they know you. And I'm like, never heard of them. It's just this bizarre thing that people do. So I appreciate that you have that wisdom to go, but you did have a little snippet that I didn't know, and it's like, I've really appreciated, there was a woman who wrote a song about Nicole, and she, after her first meeting with her, that's how impacted she was. And so I just love hearing stories, and when you shared that she spoke and the girls were really impacted, and yeah, it was.
Well, that's it. We were the same. Yeah, absolutely. We had these staff meetings set up by the lady who ran our brothel, who is such a beautiful lady, Miss Vicky.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, she's so beautiful. And she was a famous sex worker. She was famously successful sex worker, and she loved it. She loved the job. And then as she got older, she moved into management. And she was like a proud member of the sex industry. But she always thought, you know, but you got to be positive about it, girls. Like, you got to, you know, save your money and buy yourself a house and all that.
That's awesome.
And so she would counsel the girls about money and try and set them up with bank managers and all that stuff.
And it was her initiative to get guest speakers in, because I know Nikki was going around to brothels to, in, you know, her, she was really passionate about women's self-esteem and self-care and self-love.
I think they probably met up through in those days it was called the Prostitutes Collective of Victoria or something, which is not a very PC name now, but this was in the late 90s. And so Miss Vic decided we'd have staff meetings, which we all thought was hilarious. But as I said, she'd put on free food and drink, and so some people would come, and it was in a bar. And I remember the guest speaker before, it was once a month, the lady who came before, the month before Nikki, had slides, and there were other people in the bar, and this lady's putting up slides of STDs, and we were laughing. It was ridiculous.
Oh, how fun.
It's hilarious.
How fun.
I remember Nikki's session very clearly. I remember what she wore.
What did she wear?
She wore this long skirt, as was the thing in the late 90s. She was like kind of grunge.
Yeah, yeah.
She no makeup. She's really pretty blonde and
very natural.
Yeah, very natural.
She had her very short hair then, do you remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because she hadn't cut her hair that long before she died. So I just wondered. It's funny the things that you sort of want to know as a sister.
Yeah.
Like trying to picture when you met her. Mm.
So we go into the staff meeting down at the bar and we're just thinking, oh, I hope there's spring rolls, you know. and we see this nice lady over there setting up her little table of pamphlets and that, and we think,
oh, bless her.
Oh, okay, at least she's young, she looks cool, like hopefully it won't be too boring. and then she starts talking, and I'll probably get in trouble for this on social media, but a lot of the girls had come from traumatic backgrounds, you know?
Mm.
And so when she started talking, they really did engage very quickly because she was very straightforward, but she was talking about self-care and she was talking about being kind to yourself, and she got to them very quickly and she was just kind and...
That's awesome. She did have an amazing, amazing ability to draw people towards her. I think because of her realness... And she had a peacefulness about her, she had a complete lack of judgment, I think, too, and just had this amazing ability to accept everyone. And I think, too, she had an incredible wisdom because of, you know, her experiences in life. I think she had an incredible wisdom as well for her years.
So they really wanted, a lot of them grabbed her card. In fact, she ran out of cards, I remember.
Oh, that's cool. She would have been spoke.
Yeah.
Well, she was really early in, so she was working at the ARDOC Youth Foundation, where she'd been working while she was finishing up her supervision.
That's it. I remember that because when the stories started to come out, it was so triggering is the word I'm going to use, because I remember her telling us all of that. I'm just setting up my own business. I don't really have the cards ready yet. I'm working out of my home.
It's just starting this new life. I think that's added to the tragedy because she was just in this most, she'd just come to this most beautiful place in her life. She'd done all the work on herself. In conjunction with that work on herself, she'd always worked and helped other people. She always worked in a field where she was helping other people. But she'd got to this place where she was starting her own business and she was just beaming with love and light and excitement. And I'll never forget the Saturday night when I saw her before she died, which was the Monday morning. She was so excited that she had a new client. She'd had clients. This was a new client. Like this, well, as we know now, Dupas, he'd been, you know, spinning her this story of that he was depressed and having relationship troubles and, you know, of course she wanted to help him, but she had no idea. So she'd never met him. And so the first time she met him obviously was when he came to her house. But I remember on the Saturday night she was just like, Kylie, I'm so excited. You know, I've got a new client on Monday morning. And, yeah, it was a really big deal because this was a new, you know, she'd created this. You know, she was living her passion and all she wanted to do was help other people. So I just find it so bizarre that such evil found such light, because she really was such a being of light. She just emanated this light. I've never met anyone like her, actually, and it's not just because she's my sister. I really have yet to meet anyone like her. And this evil predator made an appointment, but it was never his intention to have psychotherapy, obviously. So she let him in, went down to the kitchen and prepared the coffee and came back to the front room where she worked from. And that's when he attacked her and stabbed her to death and then mutilated her body. So very horrific and, like I said before, very blindsiding for us all. We just, I'll never forget that, the call when we found out, the call, I call it, that call. Yeah. Sorry, I think I digressed.
No, not at all.
Yes, but, yeah, the tragedy, isn't that the tragedy of her being on this precipice of this new season in her life and just getting to this really amazing place where she just had so much to give. She'd done all the work on herself and just worked so hard at the course and, yeah, she was just amazing.
I remember walking into my shift at the brothel a couple of nights later and the girls running out to tell me.
Oh, wow.
That's Nikki. It was Nikki.
Wow. How was that for you?
Oh, it was devastating. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And you'd only met her the once and it was still really impacted. Mm.
But some of them had said that they'd called her and she hadn't got back to them and now they knew why. Or. But no, they were devastated.
Mm. Yeah, I can't even tell you, like, the journey. It's kind of bizarre. I feel really old now to think that we're coming up for 22 years in April it'll be. So my children, who were 7 and not quite 3, are now 28 and 24, and I'm a grandma. Like, and it's just so bizarre. And I just think of all the milestones that she's been missed and that she's missed and that she's never got to experience for herself as well. Like, you know, when that's really sad, when, you know, we attend a 30th, I think, oh, Nikki never got a 30th or a 40th or a 50th or never had the chance to get married and have children. And I just feel, you know, that's been a lot of processing around the frustrations of what has been taken from her and what has been taken from us. Like, obviously, her presence in our life has gone, so we miss all that joy of being with her. But it's also all of those things that she's never had to experience. She's never had the opportunity to experience, and it's completely senseless. And it should never have happened. This was a man that's my biggest. It's taken me the longest time to process the fact that a man that has preyed on women for over 30 years and was labelled the most vicious serial rapist never ever received the maximum sentence. He, despite continually committing the most heinous crimes against women, he never ever got a maximum sentence, and every time he was released, he re-offended immediately while he was on parole. You just think so much has been taken, and the trauma that occurs with a homicide, the actual trauma, and I think of what my young daughters had to experience. Unfortunately, a year after Nikki was murdered, my husband and I separated, so we didn't make it through that trauma, you know, initially. So that, you know, the girls, my two daughters, you know, the impact that's had on their whole life, you know, my parents, my brother. He moved overseas. He lives overseas. I guess that was his grief response. Whenever you hear of a murder, but particularly a young woman, I'll never forget when Jill Maher died, and it was a similar case with Adrian Bailey. Like, he should never have been free to kill. Like, he was a repeat offender. Like, I do remember back in the day, like, we got quite passionate about advocating, you know, for changes to the system back in the early days. And I remember even, you know, campaigning as a member of Victim of Crime. I remember going with Mum. We had a meeting with Rob Hulls, who was the Attorney General at the time. And I just remember, there were all these things that came out that back in 1981, this doctor said this, you know, about this about Dupas, that it was unlikely he would ever be rehabilitated. And there were all these statements over the years, and we took all of this, you know, we campaigned, and it was just like, you may as well have been banging your head against a brick wall. Nobody, particularly of the feminine voice, I just think this society we live in has real trouble hearing particularly a calm feminine voice. It still is such a patriarchal society, I'm sorry, but I don't imagine that anything will really change until, in terms of the system, until perhaps a judge's child is murdered, or until there's an impact. Look, I know it's complex. I know the system is really complex. It's not a just, I don't believe it's particularly just always, but it's a system and it's all we've got. I do think the police are amazing. The police fight to catch these evil predators, but unfortunately they're released to prey on women again.
Yeah, and we do hear that those sentiments from the other side too, from police, from homicide detectives and former detectives. It's really lovely to hear it from you, the kind of relationship that you still have with Jeff Ma.
Oh, we love Jeff. We do. I'll never, ever forget. It was only, you know, and there's a lot you forget with trauma and shock. And, I mean, you know, I can recall that I was rocking back and forth for many weeks after. It's like your body is trying to assimilate this terrible, you know, it's such a fracturing thing for the psyche. I remember just fracturing into so many parts. But I do remember being at my dad's house in Camberwell and Jeff was there, and I remember saying to him, Jeff, you know, how the heck do you do this, go to these crime scenes and see what you see? How do you do, you know, because it was horrific, you know, it was horrific. And, you know, these amazing people are going to these crime scenes and being impacted. And I remember saying to him, how do you do it? And he said, Kylie, I love my job because I, you know, we've got to catch these evil people, you know, it was just so passionate. We've got to get them off the street. And I just remember being really, you know, the sacrifice these police make, their own well-being, you know, the stresses that they're under. And back when Nikki was murdered was a time when police were allowed to work around the clock, and they did, you know, because if you look at it from our point of view, Nikki had no enemies. She was an absolute sweetheart. Like, we were trying to think, was it her boyfriend's ex-partner? We're grappling for answers, you know. We know it's true and yet we can't believe this has happened. And these police just worked tirelessly. I remember Jeff said they didn't talk for days. They just were just so shocked and just so focused on what it was, just this eerie sense at St Kilda Road. I remember him describing it. Yeah, we're just really impacted by how much they cared about us, even though they had this job to do, that they really wanted to get this perpetrator for us to have that justice. And, yeah, we have stayed in touch because we're all just so grateful to Jeff and the team. Yeah, they were really, really great people.
How long did it take for you to hear the name Peter Dupas? Do you remember?
Yes, I believe it was on the Thursday. So,
oh, really? That quick?
It was very quick. I believe it was 3 days. So Monday morning she died. Monday night her friend Rena was going over there for dinner and found her. We were just like, what the heck is going on? Like, who could have done this? Like, that just adds to... You're in this complete shock. So you're going, you know, you're not sleeping, you're not eating, you're having all sorts of toileting and vomiting issues because of the shock. Like, it's just, you've got, you know, for me as a mum, I still had to kind of be present, and, you know, I had a child that still needed special formula because of her health issues, and it was just this bizarre time. But I remember we definitely knew by the funeral, which was on Friday. So I believe we found out on the Thursday that we heard the name Peter Dupas, but for us that meant nothing. But we knew, we were told it was a serial rapist and a violent man that had, yeah, we were told that he'd been known to police since he was 14. So it was like, well, how did he find Nikki? And then that just starts that whole other line of questioning.
That's a lot to take in a week. It's almost, I'm thinking, it's almost like I'd rather take a little bit longer.
Well, I don't know, because I don't know. I think the not knowing is horrendous, actually, and I really feel for other victims of crime. I think I said that in an email to you, that we knew Well, it was my dad that gave me that perspective, actually. He's very good like that. He said, I was probably feeling particularly sorry for myself or down about it all. And he said, you know, we are very lucky because, one, we had her body. The police found her body. Like in a lot of homicides and these psychopaths, her body's never found. So we did, even though homicide did take away so much from us, like we couldn't go to her house because it was a crime scene. We weren't allowed into her house. We were told at the viewing that you can't, not to cuddle her, because we weren't to touch her because she was so badly damaged that she might, you know, not stay in one piece. That, you know, homicide, in terms of that, you know, for that final goodbye of viewing in the coffin, just to have this little part of her face peeking out from this sort of, I don't know what you would call it, this shawly thing they draped over her. So, you know, homicide took so much away from us. But we have to remember that we did have her body to say goodbye to. We have to remember that the perpetrator was caught, and we have to hold on to the fact that we did get closure through the courts. And those three things are, we are grateful for, because we know that other families don't get that. And I can't imagine what that's like to not know where, you know, like these little children that was, where are they and what happened? And like, yeah, I can't even imagine. So we have to be grateful for those things that we did, even though homicide took so much from us. And it's terrible, Michelle. I can't tell you how long it lasts in your mind, where you just, your brain just goes over imagining what's happened. And it's horrific what homicide, you know, not only have you lost somebody so dear to you in an instant that you have, but you have the torment of the way they died and what were they feeling. And yeah, it's not something you can ever imagine. Even if someone had told me what happened, I thought, well, I'm sure I'll drop dead of a heart attack. I wouldn't survive it. I couldn't imagine of surviving if I'd known. But the body's amazing. Shock is amazing. It protects you. And that's something, when I work with people dealing with horrendous griefs, I can, don't share my story, but I can absolutely give credibility to the fact of what they're experiencing.
And speaking of shock, tell me about Rena. Tell me about her experience.
Rena's got an amazing story. Have you met Rena?
No.
It'd be amazing if you could get on to Rena. Can you imagine what she went through? She went to the house. She was struck by the fact that it was dark. It felt cold, like, you know, Nikki would have had the heater on. The door was ajar a little bit. And so she walked into the house, and it was one of those houses in North that had those long passages, and then all the houses are, I mean, all the rooms are off to one side. So the very front room, her home office was at the very front of the house. So she looked in there, and she couldn't make sense because of the shock again. She couldn't really make sense of what she saw. At first she thought Nikki, I remember her telling me, she thought Nikki was playing some kind of bizarre game that, you know, was she playing charades, or was she, you know, Nikki was a creative soul and was a painter, and, you know, was Nikki doing something weird? And then she thought, oh my gosh, Nikki's killed herself. Like, what has she done to herself? And then when she looked again, she thought, oh no, Nikki couldn't have done that to herself. So Rena was a very special friend of Nicole's, and Rena was actually the daughter-in-law of the head of the psychotherapy school, that the couple that ran the school where Nikki trained, the college where Nikki trained. Rena was married to their son, or with their son. So Rena didn't ring the police first. She rang Carly to say, something's happening to Nikki, something's happening to Nikki, you know, and then Carly said, ring the police. And so my brother's girlfriend happened to be at Carly's house, because, you know, they're all connected. So my brother's girlfriend, Lisa, was with Carly, and so Andrew and Carly were talking, something's happened to Nikki, Nikki's dead. So then Lisa's rung my brother And then my brothers rang my dad, and my poor dad got the phone call from my brother saying, "Nikki's dead, Nikki's dead, Nikki's dead." So that's how he found out the news. And so then I got a phone call from my stepmom, my dad's wife. So Katie rang me, and then I didn't realise that I'd sort of collapsed, but I do remember my husband coming along, grabbing the phone, talking to Katie, and then saying, "We've got to ring your mum." And then I remember grabbing the phone and saying, "You can't ring mum, you can't ring mum, you can't ring mum." So basically back to Rena. So then the police came, and then it was a crime scene. My dad and my brother went over there, but they were very frustrated that they had to stay in the car. So then they had to convince the police too. Like my dad said, he had to say, you know, "I'm Nicole's father and this is her brother." But
I'm assuming that your dad and brother would not have been allowed in, right?
No, they were very frustrated that.
And yet in hindsight, that surely that would be for the best.
Well, it's a tricky thing because I don't know, because I still, one of my biggest, because I remember saying to my husband, I was just like, it was this mantra, "You've got to take me to Nikki's, you've got to take me to Nikki's, we've got to go to Northcote, we've got to sort this out, this has got to have been a mistake." And I hounded this poor guy. He had to make that really hard call. He really believes I've never forgiven him for it, but of course I forgive him for it. He made a choice, but I was just obsessed. I had to get over to her house. But I know now, obviously, I wouldn't have been allowed to go in there anyway. But that's all you want to do is be, you know, and can you imagine as a parent or an older sibling?
Oh, yeah.
You feel this protective, like you want to, you want to take care, even in death, you want to take care of her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a very frustrating aspect of the fact that it was homicide, that, you know, we couldn't hold her body, you know, and by the time we did see her body, like I said, she'd had to go to the coroner's and, yeah, so horrendous, horrendous. Full on, hey?
I mean, it's full on to talk about it. Do you talk about it very often? When's the last time you talked about it like this?
Not for a long time. Not for a long time. That's probably why it's coming out as it is, because, yeah, I was very, very repetitive and obsessed. I think I've learned too now that I'm in a role of counselling and ministering to others in grief. I understand that what we do, we particularly as women, I think there's men also that, but particularly as women, we're verbal processors. So in order to process this enormous loss and in order to process the way that Nikki died, I needed to verbalise it, and I did that repeatedly. And I had 2 years of psychotherapy myself with, which is an interesting story in itself, because Nikki pretty much effectively set me up with one of her colleagues. She set me up with one of her colleagues pretty much the Friday night before she died.
No way.
Yep. So, and on the Saturday night when we caught up at my dad's for the family dinner, which was the last time we all saw her, on the Saturday night, I remember when we were embracing and saying goodbye, she said, "I'll call you Tuesday night to see how you got on with Mary," because I had actually made an appointment with Mary on Tuesday. Nikki was murdered on the Monday. So I remember bizarrely ringing Mary on the Tuesday morning, who obviously knew about it, being in the psychotherapy circle, that close group of girlfriends. I remember ringing Mary quite calmly and saying, "Look, I'm really sorry, Mary. I actually can't make the session today. Nikki's been murdered." And she said, "Oh, Kylie," and she just kept me on the phone, and I just wouldn't be able to tell you what we spoke of. But I just remember like how incredible that that was set up just before she died. And so I had this amazing woman. I don't think I really had the presence of mind to thank her back at the time and tell her exactly how much she did really help me. But Yeah, so it's incredible. And even the way that Nikki had this incredible thing above her desk, a little saying. I don't know if you've heard of mourning is not forgetting. Have you heard of that, Mark?
No.
Marjorie Allingham, I think her name is. She had this, it was almost like instructions for us. She'd left us instructions on her desk of what we were to do after her. Like it's kind of like you might just say, well, that's all a bit spiritual and hoop, but there were so many little things that she'd left to help us in, not that she, you know, could she have known? How could she know? The police said that she'd been stalked for 6 weeks, and she had said she'd been having dreams of a wolf, so it's a predator. So maybe on a subconscious level she knew she was being stalked. I don't know, but she did leave this amazing little, this wisdom. It's like mourning is not forgetting. It's an undoing. Every minute tie has to be untied and something permanent and valuable recovered and assimilated. It goes on to say the end is gain, of course. Blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be made strong, in fact. But the process is like all human births, painful, long, and dangerous. And I just think how amazing that she left that. That was just on her desk.
And now here you are in counselling, in a counselling role. Were you, I mean, I know you weren't Christian and you weren't in the pastoral role, but were you looking into counselling before?
No. So I'd always had a heart for kids. So I went teachers' college straight from school. Then I became a mum. My first calling actually after Nikki died was funerals. So I became a funeral celebrant. So I did that for 5 years, so working with families in grief. And then, so that was probably my first calling once I became a Christian. And I found that quite interesting because I'd pretty much after Nikki died, you know, back when I was still like starting to think, well, if there is a God, I tell you what, I'm never going to another funeral again, and the gloves are off, I'm not doing death, and, you know, all those things that you say to the universe or to God. And so I have a bit of a laugh when I think, you know, God must have been laughing, or, you know, whatever you believe, to think that, yeah, my first calling was to be going and ministering to families in grief and leading services. And I was so passionate about doing beautiful, like it's the last chance for families to say goodbye. So, but that took its toll, and then I ended up sort of feeling I still wanted to help people in grief, but it wasn't all I wanted to do. So I found myself being led to do a course in ministry and theology. And my first role, and I've been doing that for the last 6 years, as a school chaplain. So I get to work with children. But funnily enough, the schools where I've been led to, in the last 4 years, we've had 3 dads commit suicide. So ministering to families through their horrendous grief of losing their husband and father, working with the children and those left behind. We've had the very tragic loss of an older sibling, actually 2 older siblings, 1 to suicide and 1 to a freak accident. So working with the siblings and the family again left behind. So, but it's not all I do now, so I think that makes it more manageable that, you know, I might be working with children with anxiety, or I might be working with parents that have separated and need support, or their children need support, or domestic violence, or, you know, it's a bit more varied now than just going to funerals every day, which is kind of ironic. But I think in that season that brought me some sort of closure or peace. I remember my eldest was 16, and I remember one of her friends saying to me, Kylie, you know, you're just so weird. What, you know, why are you know, you go to funerals every day? And I remember saying, you know, it's actually not weird. It's part of, I'm learning that it's part of life. And in understanding that death occurs, like obviously this tragic is another, but death, unfortunately, is we have to say goodbye to our loved ones. It teaches us that life is short. And so that's where I learned, like, life is this gift and it's so fragile. So doing funerals reminded me of that.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to walk right up to something every day, don't you, to really just face it every day.
So true. That's so true. I think that's our greatest teacher. Until you, we can be afraid of something and want to avoid it, but it's actually when we go close to it and experience it and live it. But not, don't stay there. But don't stay there. You know, like I think for years I marinated in my grief and I very depressed and you know, put on the mask, but that inside my head it was not good. And, you know, you put on a show for the kids and the family because you don't want any, but you just quietly go insane. So I think there's a place for feeling it, but then you've got to, you can't stay there. You've got to validate that, you've got to feel it, and you've got to release it. Easier said than done.
You may have noticed we've reissued episode 31 of Australian True Crime, featuring retired homicide detective Jeff Maher, who led the investigation into the murder of Nicole Patterson. Still to come on this all-new episode of Australian True Crime, I have a confession to make that will knock Kylie's socks off in a great way. But first, thank you so much to our patrons for helping us to help Kylie tell her story. Thank you Jenny Woods, Kit Gregg, Jess Gamelli, Ali Mack, Nicole Galloway and Annette Gill.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Coming up on Australian True Crime, a private moment between Kylie, Nicole, and a special song. But first, Kylie emailed me a couple of days after we first spoke to say that she felt she'd left something important out of our original conversation. So we jumped back on the line again.
Well, thank you so much for being open. I just had this niggling feeling and it just wouldn't go away that, yeah, well, it was kind of, to be honest, it's been really surreal. Because like wanting to talk to you and then ending up doing a podcast, my friend that told me about you just thinks it's hilarious and the best thing ever that she mentioned you, that you spoke about Nikki on a podcast, and now I'm on one. It's hilarious. Boy, I did a lot of talking. I'm so sorry.
Oh, that's fantastic. We love that. It's not about me, babe.
I thought, oh, you poor thing. When I listened to it, I'm like, oh, my gosh. And the other thing I thought was, wow, I got all stressy at the end because I realized I think in order to talk about that stuff, I must have to, on some level of consciousness, actually leave my body. I don't know how to describe it, but it's like I can say it without feeling it, but then after, like, wow, it's full on. Because I learned a lot. And I hadn't talked about it for so long. So it's been such a long time since I've done any, like this was, I think this whole process was really interesting compared to when I've been invited to speak at places or preach at churches or share my testimony. Like, I can feel like I've been hit by a bus. Like, in the past, I used to feel like, whoa, you know, really exposed and really, like, I didn't get that, which was really good because I think I didn't have all the weeks leading up to, I didn't prepare. It was just all, so I wonder if there was some sort of, I think that was helpful to not overthink it and just trust the process. Thank you again for the new experience. And I was just thinking, I don't know whether it was because it's a new forum and it felt secular. So I think there was something in me that felt like, oh, maybe I'm not meant to talk about God, which was, but now learning about you, that you're very open to spirituality. And, you know, my daughter told me you've written 3 books about Buddhism. And I'm just like, wow, she's really open. And I just had this niggle that I just didn't, because honestly, it is really by the grace of God that I do what I do, and it is really all about God's purposes for my life now. Like, that's how, like, I gave Viktor Frankl all this credit, but I didn't give God's intervention in my life enough credit, I didn't think, and that was just wouldn't go away. So I was brave, and so don't want to be a pain. But if you're able to edit in a couple of little things, that would be much, much appreciated. I'd actually feel like more than satisfied. I feel satisfied.
Yeah, that's easy. No worries at all.
Oh, that's awesome. There was the bit where you probably remember where I say, would we choose it? No way, not in a million years. And that's obvious. And because you said something along like how other victims of crime have talked about it, the funny way that it becomes a gift. I just felt like I didn't emphasize enough. So would we choose it? Not in a million years. That's obvious. The thing is, my family didn't have a choice. And if we did have a choice, we would never have chosen for Nikki to go through what she went through. And, you know, so we didn't have a choice, but now we have to choose life. And I felt a bit bad. I felt that it was a bit judgmental when I said about victims of crime. I did say that it's a terrible tragedy and it eats them, it kills them. I really feel like if there's some way to put in that, this is where I feel like the God intervention might be a good place to put it, but you might think it's somewhere else. But I feel like that I'd like to say perhaps I would have stayed in that terrible place of despair if it hadn't been for God's intervention in my life.
I think it might be really helpful if you told us a bit about that moment that you felt God's intervention in your life, if it was a moment.
Do you think that is something that you'd like to put in?
Yeah.
Ah, well, sure. I can tell you exactly. I was upstairs at home on my own feeling very sorry for myself, very, very full of self-pity and just deep, deep sorrow and desperation. And the girls were with their dad that weekend and I was home alone, like I said, feeling very sorry for myself. And I literally fell to my knees in my bedroom and I cannot even describe the way that I suppose you'd say I held out a prayer. But I sort of this guttural prayer, like, if there's a God out there, you have to help me because I cannot do this anymore. And it was that complete moment of despair and I guess complete surrender. And I felt a physical presence come and stand beside me so that I actually turned to look and see who it was, almost expecting it to be Nicole, because I was just so obsessed and so desperate to see her again. And there was no one there, but I felt this incredible presence. And I knew then, I didn't really know anything about religion or the Bible or anything, but in that moment I knew God was real. And now I suspect maybe that was Jesus that came to stand beside me or an angel, I don't know, but it was physical. But what was different is all of a sudden I had this peace feeling in my hope and peace and this zenness, I suppose, this calmness, this enter my heart and my mind. And all of a sudden I had this feeling everything's going to be okay. And I had not had that. I just had this tormented mind and these really unmanageable emotions that I was trying to control, but I just got to the point that I just thought I couldn't. So God's intervention in my life is, I can't deny it. I can't deny that. It was very real. And like I said earlier, I was an atheist, but I could not deny this incredible intervention in my life. And I remember I didn't go downstairs that night, and like my sister wasn't alive again, and my husband hadn't come back at that stage, and there was still washing spewing out of the laundry and dishes piled up in the sink, and my head was still a mess. But all of a sudden I knew I had this peace and this hope. All of a sudden I knew that it was going to be okay. I was going to get through this, and that it's very real. And that's, and all of a sudden I've just had promptings, and I've just known the next step to take. I had someone almost walking alongside me to help me. That's how I describe my life today, is that I have help. And yeah, it was a profound experience. And you know, the only other time that I've ever experienced anything like that was, I referred earlier to viewing Nikki's body in the coffin, and that was an incredibly distressing moment. And what I didn't share was I had some time alone with her, and I pulled up a chair alongside, and I started singing to her a Titters song. We were mad about Titters back in the day.
Oh, Titters.
Do you remember Titters?
Yeah, I love Titters.
And we had a song that we used to sing, you know, You Are My Sister, and I started singing that to her, and I felt like she'd come and sat on my lap. I felt a physical presence. So I feel that that was probably God then too, comforting me at my most heartbroken time. But I didn't know that then. I suspect now that was a spiritual moment then, but I just, you know, I just thought that was Nikki's presence there with me. But yeah, that's the only other time I've felt that very physical, as if someone has come to stand beside me. I couldn't see, but it was very real, very actual physical feeling, as if someone's actually there touching you. So that's it in a nutshell.
I'm going to play that song at the end of this podcast, I reckon.
Michelle! Oh, thank you.
No problem. It's easy.
No, that is so beautiful and honouring. Oh, wow, you're a very special soul. Thank you so much. No, seriously, this has just been really lovely to go back there and share with someone about Nikki and someone that's met her. And
but also I had something to add that I think you're going to love, Kylie.
Yeah.
Because I've had an epiphany.
Oh, wow.
As well. Yes, honestly, I have. and it's also a confession, to be honest, because I have always been a very passionate opponent of the chaplains in schools program.
Oh, Michelle, you have not.
I have.
See, look how God is working.
Oh, well, yes, I hadn't thought
of
it that way.
Are you feeling a little bit better about chaplains now that you know it's not a religious program, it's a well-being program?
I'm feeling 100% better about it.
Are you serious?
I'm deadly serious. I'm converted.
Michelle, that is the best. Like, imagine if, because people are so misinformed, unfortunately, we are not allowed to proselytize. I think that is why I was reticent to talk too much about my faith. I had this because I work in a government school and we are not allowed to talk about God. So I have to exhibit love and light and act as if people need to see me through my actions, not my words. Does that make sense? And so it's
absolutely, yes. Yes. Ever since you first started talking to me about what you do in your daily work, about helping families, dealing with just normal family issues and helping kids deal with grief and with family violence and anxiety and all that kind of stuff. Yes, absolutely, I get it.
Michelle, you've made my day. That is so exciting. If you ever want to do a podcast about that conversion and we could talk about that and perhaps clear that up for other people, because seriously, just recently there's been many attempts over the years and they've all been thwarted, praise God, because chaplains, and I'm not just talking about me, like hopefully I'm making a difference.
Well, listen, I've been part of those attempts, Kylie. I actively campaigned to get chaplains out of schools, Kylie. Wow. I'm a big get for you, Kylie.
Michelle, this is a God job. Can you feel that? Can you feel, like, seriously, can you feel something that, like, that there was something for you in this meeting as well? Like, it wasn't just all, like.
Oh, there's been lots in this meeting for me, Kylie. There's been tons.
Wow. That is really cool. And thank you for, like, wow, thank you for sharing that and being brave to.
I was going to email you and tell you that, but then you gave me this opportunity, or maybe God did. It's been working again.
No
so.
Way. I love it. I love honesty. I love it. That's so awesome. Wow. Oh, my gosh, you were one of those. But you're not anymore.
No.
Wow. Oh, you're gorgeous. I'm so pumped. I'm going to tell my friends. I had my Zoom date with my girls on the girls I went to school with, and I'm like, oh, I've got to tell you, it's been a really bizarre week. Have any of you heard of Michelle Lorry? You know, they're like, yeah, and I'm like, what? And like, oh, and they're all like, and I'm like, well, just did a podcast with her this morning. And they're like, what? There you go. With my sister beside me, I am strong, I am free. When she's with me, yeah. With my sister beside me, I am strong, I am free. She believes in me. They say united we stand together. Thank you. It's been a lovely, lovely experience. In a bizarre way, you know. It feels, but like I really love new experiences. So yeah, like now I'm a podcaster. With my sister beside me, I am strong, I am free. She believes in me.
Thank you to Kylie Nicholas, school chaplain extraordinaire, and to retired homicide detective Jeff Maher, who features on episode 31, which has been uploaded again so you can learn about his investigation into Nicole Patterson's murder. Thank you to our patrons Mary Murphy, Isabella, Wendy Love, Julie, and Steph Davidson. And thank you to you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime, made in association with the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Australian True Crime, the live show, is coming.